word Shmini itself means eight, and it's referring to the eighth day of the Miluim. What's the eighth day of the Miluim? So when the Mishkan was set up, Mishkan was initially commanded when the when Moshe came down from the mountain on Yom Kippur after the sin of the golden calf, when he was commanded to then start building the Mishkan, the Mishkan was then finished in terms of the construction, the making of the individual vessels, the Kalim. They were all finished on the 25th of Kislev, which is the winter time. But the Mishkan was not commanded to be erected and to put into full-fledged operation until the 1st of Nisan. Till the 1st of Nisan. The 1st of Nisan was the inauguration ceremony of the Mishkan. And that's what this parasha is about. This is how the parasha begins. What happened on the eighth day? And on the eighth day, there was one final service which had to be performed, which was done by Aaron, a Kohen, the high priest. And then with this one service, which he would do on the eighth day, this would be the signal for the Shekhinah, for the divine presence to come down. And then the divine presence came down and rested onto the Mishkan for the very first time. And the eighth day, that's what the Shemini is about. So a lot of things happened on this eighth day, the Medrash says. This eighth day, the first of Nisan, which is what it is, the first of Nisan, that's what it corresponds to on the calendar. So the Medrash says, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when the Mishkan was established, it took 10 crowns. There were 10 crowns which were put upon this day. What are the 10 crowns? The first one was Maisa Bereishis, the act of creation. The world was created on the first of Nisan. Come back to that afterwards. L'chadoshim, the first month, meaning to say that Rosh Chodesh Nisan was designated as the first of the months of the calendar year. So we always count the months based upon Nisan. So Nisan is the first one. So the first of Nisan gets the crown of being the first one of the months of the year. Nisim, for the princes, the heads of the tribes were brought the sacrifices. They started bringing them on the first of Nisan. L'kahuna, for the priesthood, because now the priesthood began its full operation on the first of Nisan. La'avoda, for the service of the base of Migdash, of the Mishkan, it began on the first of Nisan. L'yirida se'esh, for the descending of the fire down upon the tabernacle on the first of Nisan, that crown. L'achilas kodshim, eating of the sacrifices of the first of Nisan. Issa bomas, the prohibition of outside altars, outside the Mishkan, began on the first of Nisan, because up until this point, a outside altar was allowed outside of the precincts of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. So if a person wanted to have a private altar and bring a sacrifice, not in the Mishkan or not in the Beis HaMikdash, that was allowed. But that prohibition began on the first of Nisan. Lishchan Shechinah B'Yisrael. First of Nisan was the day upon which the divine presence rested upon the Jewish people. And then number 10, Levarech Es Yisrael. The first of Nisan was the day when the Birkas Kahanim began for the very first time, the priestly blessing. The first time we have the priestly blessings is in this parasha also. The parasha doesn't describe the priestly, but the actual blessing itself is described in a later portion. But it says that Aaron blessed the people with what? With the priestly blessings, the special priestly blessings, which he was told to do. That was the first time, on the first of Nisan. So the first of Nisan gets these 10 crowns. Tremendous day, an amazing day. Now, if you pay attention to this medrash and the 10 things which the day was crowned with, all nine of them, with the exception of the first one, were things which happened literally on that day itself. The priestly blessings, the avoda, the service of the Mishkan began, the kahuna, the priesthood began, all these different things, the going down of the fire. But the first one is not referring to what happened on that day itself. The first thing, the first crown, which the Medrash mentions, is the creation of the world. The creation of the world was created on the first of Nisan. But that's a little bit of an anomaly in terms of the list of things. That's going back to the beginning of time. So what does it mean that the world was created on the first of Nisan? Why does it belong over here? Or is there a connection? Or is it really the fact that maybe the world was created when the Mishkan was set up? And the answer is, I just gave it away. Yes, right? Because this goes back to a very well-known machlokas, well-known debate in the Gemara between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. We learned this in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua had a machlokas about when the world was created. Was the world created in Tishrei, or was the world created in Nisan? So Rabbi Eliezer says the world was created in Tishrei. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, the world was created in Nisan. So what's the machlokas, and how can there be a debate about when the world was created? So the standard understanding of it is that the opinion of Eliezer, the world was created in Tishrei, means that the world was created in machshava, the intention of creation. These are lofty ideas, how to understand them, not so clear, but we're going to see a practical idea in a second. The world was created in machshava, that God had the machshava, the thought, the intention to create in Tishrei. But Lamaisa, the actual practical implementation of the creation of the world, began in Nisan. That's one understanding. The sefer which I have over here, this is from the Slonim Rebbe. He says that Kedushas Levi, he quotes from the Kedushas Levi, he says that another way of appreciating this is that on the first of Nisan, in Tishrei, the world was actually physically created. Yes, the world was physically created in Tishrei. But the tachlis of creation, what's the tachlis? The purpose of creation, the real purpose of creation, wasn't realized until the first of Nisan, when the Mishkan was set up. When the Mishkan was made, that represented the purpose of creation. Because up until this point, and it's fascinating because we've gone through, historically, chronologically, the Jewish people, have gone through centuries and centuries, and they've gone through Yetzias Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. They came to Har Sinai, to Mount Sinai, received the Torah. But things haven't really finished yet. The point at which the whole story concludes is only when the Mishkan, the tabernacle, is finally set up. Only when the tabernacle is set up and put into operation, we've reached the zenith. At that point, the purpose of creation has been realized. The purpose of, and what is the purpose of creation? What is the purpose of creation? The purpose of creation, to serve God. But one dimension of it, one side of the coin of that, is that the divine presence fills the world. That there's a filling of the divine presence in the entire, every corner of the world, the divine presence rests. How does it come about? It comes about, really, ideally, through the Mishkan. The tabernacle is the mechanism through which the divine presence descends down and rests inside the world. And only when the Mishkan was set up and it was inaugurated and it was begun on the eighth day, the goal has been achieved. The goal has been achieved with the purpose of creation. So therefore, it's not just a historical event that it says on the first of Nisan that the world was created. It wasn't historical. Yes, the world was physically created thousands of years before that in Tishrei. But the matara, the goal, the tachlis of creation was realized and fulfilled and came into being specifically on the Mishkan, when the Mishkan was set up, when the divine presence came down to the Mishkan, therefore the first of Nisan, received that crown of the creation of the world. So, tremendous day. To really appreciate, if this is how we are to understand the nature of the eighth day, that the divine presence descended into the world, and this is the tachlis of the creation, the purpose of creation, that Hashem fills the world, Hashem's glory fills. What a simcha d'ka day. What a joyful day. The Medrash says also, The Medrash, the different Midrashim say that Achlo Hukam a Mishkan, before the Mishkan was established and set up, Ha'olam Roseis, the world was trembling. It was so uneasy. The world was still not stable. It was trembling and unstable. Meshuhukam a Mishkan, once the Mishkan was set up, Nisbat Baseis Ha'olam, the world became firmly established. So that's a very strong statement. Tremendous day of establishing the world. The Gemara says in Megillah, B'yom HaKamos HaMishkan, that the day that the Mishkan was set up, it was a simcha lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there was a joy before Hashem, ki yom shenivru bo shemayim v'aretz, like the day that the world was created, because this is the counterpart of that creation. This is now the fulfillment of the creation. The simcha in the world, in the heavens, was so great because the world was created at this point. Fine, beautiful, fantastic thing, right? So it makes this parasha a parasha of tremendous joy and jubilation, right? That's what it is. That's what we're saying over here. The very first crown, world was created, the purpose of creation, with the Mishkan, the divine presence there. So it's good. Problem is, the very first word of the parasha. What's the very first word of the parasha? What is the very first part of the parasha? Someone read it to me.
Vayehi.
Vayehi, right? See the problem?
it's a negative thing.
Right, because there's a rule. There's a rule. It's a very interesting idea. There's a rule that the word vayehi, when the Torah uses or the Tanakh uses the word vayehi, it implies negativity and sadness and distress. And one explanation of this, a very interesting idea I heard, is when you look at the actual word itself, vayehi. So vayehi is va, the vav prefix is and, right? Yehi is it shall be. Now yehi, yehi shemi rabo, right? Yehi or yehi is it shall be. So if you put the vav at the beginning, and it shall be, it's a future tense word. But the translation says it was, right? It doesn't say it shall be. Yehi is it, yehi by itself is it shall be. Right. Well, no, but the Hebrew is it's translated as it was. So it's translated and it was, but really grammatically it should be and it shall be, because yehi is a future tense word. So vav is and the yehi is it shall be. So then why is it translated it was? So there's a rule in Hebrew grammar, a fascinating rule in Hebrew grammar called the vav hipuch, the vav which reverses the tense of the verb. So when you have a vav at the beginning of a verb, it will actually reverse the tense from past to future or future to past. And this is an example of that, because really yehi by itself is actually, it's a future tense verb. It shall be. The vav reverses it into the past, and it shall be. And it was, sorry, it was. Vayedaber, right, is another example. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemo. And Hashem spoke to Moshe. It's also the same thing. Yedaber is future. Yedaber, he shall speak. Vayedaber, and he spoke. And then it goes the other way around also, when you have an actual past tense verb, and then the vav before it turns it into the future. The Gemara says also that vayehi, this word over here, always denotes negativity, pain, and sadness. But why is that? Based upon this rule. Because if the future is being turned into the past, why would you want to turn the? Why would you want to make the future the past? Because you're not happy with what's going on. You don't want this future to happen. Therefore, you want to put it back into the past. Why would you want to make the past into the future? Because you're happy. So therefore, the Gemara says, if it says yehi by itself without the vav, then that denotes joy and satisfaction, because you want the future to actually take place. But if it's vayehi and it was. Right, you're putting the future into the past because you want to push away what's going on. You don't like what's happening, so therefore the word vayehi has this connotation of negativity and sadness. But that's just the technical explanation. But the rule is still there. That the rule is that vayehi represents sadness, pain, and distress. So at the beginning of this jubilant day, this day of tremendous joy and celebration. It starts off with this negative note of vayehi. Now, the truth is, the Gemara says, one of the reasons why it says that is because in the parasha also is the terrible tragedy of Nadav and Avihu. So it's there, that's one of the reasons. But the story of Nadav and Avihu is not until several verses later on. To have vayehi over here at the very beginning, on the very day itself, even before that tragedy took place, is also, needs understanding. Another question on the same lines is as the verses describes how Moshe, how Aaron went into the Mishkan on the eighth day and he did the service. And if you look at verse 23, at the end of this whole long service that Aaron does on the eighth day to bring down the Shekhinah, to bring down the divine presence, because it was only at the end of the service that the divine presence came down. But on that day, at the end of the service, Aaron lifted his hands and he blessed the people. And he walked out. And then it says, verse 23, Moshe and Aaron went into the Ohel Moed, into the tent of meeting, and they came out and blessed the people. Why is Moshe there? What's Moshe doing? So Rashi says, the Ohel Scroll quotes this over here, read it from the Ohel Scroll. He says, why is Moshe there as well? So he gives two explanations. The second one is, when Aaron saw that the Shekhinah had not rested upon the tabernacle, despite the long inauguration service, he just spent the whole day doing this service today. And this was at the culmination of 7 days of the whole service for 7 days, set all this work and all this inauguration, long inauguration service. He was distraught. Can you imagine if you're Aaron the Kohen and you've gone through 7 days of this laborious work of doing the service, this whole, the Miluim service for 7 days. Now you're spending the whole day and you're waiting for the divine presence to come down and you're so excited and nothing's happening. There's just like silence. the silence from heaven, silence from heaven, it began to make him feel distraught. And he blamed himself and he said, yeah, I know that God is angry with me because of the sin of the golden calf. He started blaming himself, feeling very, very down. And it's because of me that the Shekhinah has not rested upon Israel. He turned to Moshe and he said, Moshe, my brother, what have you done to me that you had me embark upon the divine service and be humiliated? What's all this for? And he was really down at this potentially joyous time, down. Immediately Moshe entered the tent of meeting with him and they prayed for mercy and the Shekhinah came down, right? So again, you have a little bit of a tone of sadness and tone of pain before the Shekhinah comes down. Vayehi is a tone of pain and sadness. You've got now Aaron right before the Shekhinah is coming down. It's a tone of pain and sadness. It's a tone of darkness. And then thirdly, in the same verse of it, Rashi says also, the Jewish people had the same reaction somewhat as well. Rashi says, when they came out and blessed the people, Rashi says, Amru vayehi Noam, Hashem Elokeinu, Aleinu. They gave the bracha to the people. May the presence of Hashem be upon us. May be Hashem's will that His divine presence should rest upon you. This is part of the brach which they said to the people. But then the Medrash says, quote, Rashi quotes the Medrash, because all 7 days of the Meluim, all 7 days of this installation service, that Moshe and Aaron Moshe was setting the Mishkan up and taking it down and doing the Avoda, the Jewish people became like despondent, and they were saying to Moshe, they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, kol ha-toreich she-tarchanu, all of this effort we're putting in to make the Shekhinah come down, they're also feeling despondent, and they were hoping that the divine presence was going to come down sooner. Despondency and sadness, and they had to be encouraged. They said, don't worry, this is what you have to do, don't worry, it's going to come. And then again, Aaron afterwards, he's also despondent. So you get this, like, you know, this atmosphere, it's an atmosphere of sadness and despondency and darkness, vayehi, before this incredibly jubilant, joyous occasion of the divine presence coming down.
And humility.
Humility as well, right. So the question is what's really happening? What's the message over here? So this I saw over here in the Sefer of the Sefer Shalom by the Shlomo Rebbe. Shmini, he says, is teshuva, right? Why? Because when does the Mishkan set up? When was the Mishkan set up? The Mishkan was set up after the Chet HaEgel, after the sin of the golden calf. The whole existence of the tabernacle is after the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, and the teshuva that the Jewish people exhibited afterwards, after the sin. And then the Mishkan was brought, was now the response from Hashem that your teshuva has been accepted. The whole existence of the tabernacle is on the heels of teshuvah. It's on the heels of downfall. It's on the heels of falling down. It's on the heels of being down in the dumps. Of being down in the dumps, meaning to say that sometimes the Shekhinah comes to us only after we've been down in the dumps. Only after we've been down in the. He writes. He says there are two ways. There are two roads to experiencing the Shekhinah. There are two roads in life of experiencing the Shekhinah. One road of life to experience the Shekhinah is like revelation at Sinai, where you are just exposed and just given this incredible light, an incredible revelation. And this also ties into Pesach. This is why it makes Shemini so appropriate to be after Pesach, because Pesach was also akin to Mount Sinai, where we were given this blast of light. We were elevated, we were brought up on high. We didn't have to do so much. I mean, I know we have to clean a lot and get ready for chametz and all that. But in terms of the real spiritual avoda, not a lot of spiritual avoda, but we're given this gift of the divine presence coming down to us on the night of Pesach and then on Shavuos as well. It's a blast. It's really a blast. It's a gift of God giving us a connection and awareness. This book of which I have is a very famous work. Maybe we'll do this after we finish Talmud Devorah. It's called Faith and Trust by the Chazon Ish, very famous work. And he talks about faith and emunah and belief in Hashem. The first chapter is all about appreciating the tremendous miracles and the amazing things in the world. And he writes at the end, he says, once man's intellect has managed to see the truth of God's existence, immediately man feels great joy and contentment. And the non-logical thinking joins with the intellect in basking in the pleasantness of Hashem. All the pleasures of the flesh slip away. A man's refined spirit becomes enveloped in holiness, as if it has left the turbid body and is walking in heavenly pathways. When man rises to such heights of holiness, a new world is revealed to him. In this world, it is possible for a man to be like an angel for a few minutes and enjoy the glow of holiness. All the world's pleasures becoming worthless comparing to the pleasure of cleaving to his creator. This is the most beautiful picture of what it means to be aware of God and be connected to God. This latent ability is one of those hidden abilities placed by the creator in the human soul. Our soul is able to experience these blissful experiences, awarenesses of Hashem, and it testifies to man's intrinsic connection to the Almighty and to man having been created to serve his creator and to connect to him. The power of the soul to be able to be given light, to be able to be given a connection, to be able to be given an awareness and a visceral experience of God's presence by looking at the world, by seeing the magnificence, the beauty, and the genius of the world, the symmetry, the magnificence. That's what the first chapter is all about. You begin to feel overwhelmed. The Rambam says you become overwhelmed by Avas Hashem, by love of Hashem. Also through learning Torah, the Rambam says, it also brings you to love of Hashem. This is one of the roads to feeling the divine presence. This is one of the roads to feeling the divine presence. But the other road to feel the divine presence is the road of downfall. It's the road of the broken heart. It's the road of mistakes. Now, I caution us, this is not a license to go ahead and make mistakes in order to do this. These are situations which happen to us, unfortunately, but we fall down, we stumble, and we find ourselves in places which are not necessarily so good and healthy, and we make mistakes, and we're humbled, right? But that place also is a road to feeling the divine presence. That's also the road to the divine presence. He writes over here, he says, the second road is that of shiftless, of lowliness, which is after sin. I'm reading the words over here, after sin. Shenofel madrigosa, a person fell down hard from his original level. Veshuvei nemesugel lohasig madrega shel gadlus abori, and he feels distant. He's not able to feel the presence of God and connect to him and understand him. Oz nosen HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yehudi es derech teshuvah. Then Hashem gives to the Jew a pathway of teshuvah. Sheyivnes atzmo, to build oneself up, mitoch shiftless atzmo, from the lowliness of self. Bebechinas mizbeach evna b'shivran levavi, I build an altar to God from the fragments of my broken heart. That's what he says, to build an altar to Hashem from the fragments of my broken heart. And that's a second way. It's a second way to get to the Shekhinah. And that's what happened with the presence of the Shekhinah in the Mishkan. Because the Mishkan was built upon that. It was built upon the Chet HaEgel. And the reason why the parasha begins, which is all about this jubilation and this joy of the divine presence descending down, it also starts again with that message again from the very beginning of Vayehi, that there's a darkness sometimes before the Shekhinah comes. And there's Busha, the shame of Aaron. Aaron feels the shame. He feels the shame and the embarrassment. And then there's the klima, also another word for shame, that the Jewish people feel ashamed. It's starting off in this tone, in this atmosphere of sadness and darkness, are broken down, because that's the point, that's the message. Because they've come from Har Sinai, and they've had the revelation, but we always have to remember that another pathway, and it's also a tremendous encouragement. You know, I think it's common when I speak to people about this. It's very common after Pesach, and for that matter, after Rosh Hashanah, after Sukkot as well, but particularly after Pesach, it's very common for people after Pesach. They have a really very, very uplifting Yom Tov. People have a very joyful Yom Tov. You know, there's a Siddurim, and it's a very uplifting Yom Tov. It's very common for people to feel like a downer after Pesach. It's very common, and they wonder where, like a week ago, we were in the Mishkan a week ago. We were surrounded by the light and the divine presence and the matzah, and all of the inspiration and the families as well. And all of a sudden, like, you know, Sunday night comes and Sunday night came and then all of a sudden it's all over. You put the dishes back. The whole world changes, the whole out. And you went, like, it just disappears so fast. And then you feel the vacuum. And it's very common for people to, you know, they go back to life and they lose it. They lose the connection. But it's such an encouragement and a chizuk. The Parsha Shmini is always after Pesach. Because we've gone through the first pathway, the first road of connecting to God, of having the Shekhinah in our life on Pesach, Seder night, family. We've had that pathway. That's the first road of the gift of the Shekhinah. But don't be discouraged if you don't hold on to it, because there's a second pathway. And the second pathway is building the Mizbeach from the fragments of the broken heart. Mm. Building the Mizbeach, building an altar to Hashem from the fragments of being broken. The Kotzke said also, there's nothing more whole than a broken heart. It's a very powerful message. Very, very powerful message. And that's why Shmini is right after Pesach, to give us chizak, to give us encouragement. And it starts off, so it's the most jubilant, amazing parasha of revelation of the Shekhinah, which we're all waiting for, we all want. We just had it a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, on Pesach. We're having it again by Shavuos, right? That's one road. That's one road to the divine presence, through seeing and experiencing and appreciating and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a direct way. But even if it doesn't work that way, the person stumbles, they lose it. Don't worry. Take that humility or take that brokenness and build a Mizbeach from that. Build a Mizbeach, build an altar to Hashem, even from there as well. And that's the message over here. That's the message. I'll just tell you a story. I think it connects a little bit. I heard this, it relates to the idea that many times greatness comes out of very, very low places. And this concept of being broken and being humiliated and humbled. So you heard of the Baba Sali. The Baba Sali was one of the most, probably the most famous mukubal of our recent generation. He lived in the Tivat in Eretz Yisrael. And he was very famous for his miracles. And he was a very holy man. So there was a man who was a very, he was gave a lot of tzedakah. And he helped his yeshiva and was very, you know, gave a lot and would always go to him for a bracha. Would always go to the Baba Sali for a bracha for him and his family. He'd go frequently whenever he was there, go frequently and he'd go in. And he was always greeted with a lot of warmth and enthusiasm and he would give him brachas, etc. And so one time he goes in and the most unusual experience happened. He goes into his room and all of a sudden the Baba Sali is sitting there and he looks up at him and he says, "What are you doing here?" And he started chastising him. He says, "Get out of here. Go out of here. Leave here right away." And the man was so like shaken. He was broken. He was a real broken person. This such a holy man and he had a relationship with. And now for him to kind of chastise him and tell him to go out this way, he was just traumatized. He just ran out. Anyway, this fella, he goes out. He didn't know what to do. Anyway, he goes back home and he had some kind of construction company. And he had a job he had to attend to, and the job required driving somewhere in the desert. And he was with some Arab workers in his car, and he was driving. And his car, some of the car got out of control. The brakes didn't work, and he was near a very, very high, like a cliff. And then, tragically, the car went over the cliff, and he was inside the car. He was screaming out Shema Yisrael. I mean, he thought it was the end where they were going down. He was saying Shema Yisrael in the front. His Arab workers were saying, what's the other expression they say? They're calling out to their God, right, in their Arabic way. And they're calling, and the car is tumbling down to its to their demise. And it lands, and to his absolute surprise and joy, he didn't die, right? He survived this. The Arabs in the back, they got killed in this crash. Wow. But he climbed out, and he had a few scratches. He couldn't believe it. He was just so to survive such a miracle. So such an accident. So after this, he had to go back to the Baba Sali, despite the fact that the Baba Sali originally had kicked him out and, rejected him. He felt he had to go back and tell him what happened. So he goes back. He's really nervous. He's terrified to go in. He goes and he's got his head down and he walks into the room and the Baba Sali looks up and he's, "Oh," and he greets him. He's, "How are you?" And he has a big smile on his face. "How are you? Please come in, sit down." He gave him a bracha, and he was completely the original way, like he used to be. This man was like, he was shocked. He didn't know what was going on. The Baba Sali realized he was shocked, and he explained to him, he said, "The reason why I did what I did to you last time," and this, only the Baba Sali, people like the Baba Sali can do these things, can know these things. He said that when you came in last time, I began to see that your tzedakah, the charity that you were giving, was going to your head. Meaning to say, you're feeling proud. there was a certain pride you had, and it wasn't as sincere. You were like kind of patting yourself on the back. I gave this, I did this, I gave that. You know, there's a sudden pride. And that, when it says that tzedakah tatzel nemoves, that tzedakah protects a person from terrible decrees, it's when it's done with humility. When the tzedakah is done with humility, it protects. But with this part, he said, but I saw that, you know, you weren't really doing with humility. You were doing with a little bit of kind of pride and arrogance. And I could see in the heavens, there was some kind of din. There was a din, there was an accusation against you. And I needed to protect you and I needed to bring you down. And that's why I humiliated you, right? I brought you down to give you that broken heart, to that give you that broken spirit. And that's why you were saved from that car accident. Hmm. That was what the Baba said. That only the Baba Sali, people like this, know these things. but it's an example that here he was proud, you know, it's, and we can translate this into many different situations. We're proud about my davening. I'm proud about the fact going to shul. I'm proud about this. I'm proud about, you know, I'm doing mitzvahs. I'm proud about my learning. And this is pride. And there should be pride. I don't want to make the wrong impression. We should be pride. But there's a pride where you kind of, you know, you want to be patted on the back. And you want the credit from other people. That's not a healthy kind of pride. There's a pride, you know, it's far right. There's a pride in knowing internally that you're serving Hashem. It should be an internal pride that I'm serving Hashem. It's not something which I need to advertise and tell other people, and I want to get plaques and recognitions from everyone else for what I'm doing. That's a false pride, right? But when we're feeling proud and feeling, you know, I'm special, I'm chashuv, I'm kind of important. Sometimes we get this patch, this kind of wake up call of being brought down. Being brought down. And then now, from what we're learning today, use that being brought down, use that descent, use that humility and that descent as a, once again, a pathway of building an altar from the fragmented parts of the heart. You can still build up from there. It's never a closed door. You can take every situation and every experience and turn it around, making it into an altar to Hashem.